What does the report card say about the first state and its efforts in preservation over the years?
Well, it's pretty much a mixed bag. There have been a lot of successes, a lot of failures, and some battles to be fought. And I guess if you're trying to make a contrast here, it's sort of a contrast between the spectacular and the vernacular. I mean, you know, we've got a tendency to get overexcited about the big saves of deteriorating properties, things like the Blue Ball Barn on Route 202. It was once part of the Moores Estate, and Gibraltar on the edge of Wilmington, which had been a mansion prominently held by a former member of the DuPont family. But then there's a feeling that the properties that tell a lot about the rest of us, the old farmhouses, one-room schoolhouses, libraries, churches, buildings like that, some people feel that they aren't always worth saving. But, you know, but they are, and especially if we really care about preserving our heritage.
And of the vernacular buildings that have been saved, what are some of the success stories there?
Well, I mean, some of them you might easily point to. The old stone school in Claymont, the Darley House, which is the home of 19th century illustrator Felix O.C. Darley, which is right across the street from the old stone school. The Tweed's Tavern in Hoquessin, the schoolhouse in Port Penn, Iron Hill Colored School outside of Newark. And in Lewis, you've got the Midway School and that entire Ship Carpenter Square residential community, which consists of homes from the 18th and 19th centuries that were moved from Sussex County into one central location in Lewis. So there are a lot of things like that to be proud of.
On the other hand, there are ones that were not saved, that wound up kind of being lost to history. Tell us a little about some of the ones that people tried to maybe make a move on but couldn't get done.
Well, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind when you ask the preservationists about this, because once a building is gone, there is a tendency to forget about it. So you have to look at some of the more recent examples, and two that you might think of would be the 250-year-old Cux Aldrich House down in Port Penn, which was eventually acquired by Delaware Wildlands, and then they were having trouble maintaining it and essentially said, we can't find anyone who will move it off our property. And when they couldn't find anyone to take the building off their hands, they had it torn down. Similarly, the old Murphy House, a farmhouse from the 1840s, which is also near Nemours and the Blue Ball Barn in that area, that got caught up between Del Dot and the way the roads were reconfigured for the AstraZeneca expansion. And essentially, Del Dot sold it over to Nemours with a deed restriction that said that the building would be preserved. And then Nemours started looking at the cost and its budget figures and said, we can't quite take care of this. And they went back to Del Dot and said, can we change the deed restrictions? Del Dot changes the deed restrictions and the house is torn down. So, those are a couple of examples of what the preservationists call demolition by neglect.
Let's talk about the current status of preservation in the state. Are there any properties currently that are in the works of being saved or trying to be saved or, you know, on the verge of not being saved?
Well, I think that one of the most interesting ones issues that's percolating right now concerns the old Forwood School, which was built in 1799 in Brandywine Hundred near Marsh and Silverside Roads. This building continued as a public school until 1939, so for 140 years it was in continuous use. That was the longest continuously serving public school in the United States, and I'm told it's the oldest school still standing in the continental United States. Now, setting properties, which a small development firm acquired the school site from the members of the Forwood family about 2 years ago, and they want to put up a mixed-use retail, commercial, residential project there. They haven't filed yet for rezoning, whatever, but that's coming down the road, probably maybe as early as next week. There are folks in the area who consider it worth saving because of the property's historic value. But the problem is that the building is really not structurally sound. There's been a tarp over the roof for a couple of years. The stone is crumbling. There's really one of the preservationists, James Hanby, who's a descendant of the Forwoods, says it. You know, it's really being held up by custom. You know, the stones know that they're there because they're supposed to be there, but there's really not much mortar holding them together. So there's an issue here as to whether that building is going to be saved, whether it's worth being saved, and that's likely to come to a head in the next couple of months as the rezoning process starts. Setting is talking about building a replica of the old school, using the original stone and placing it kind of as a centerpiece of the redeveloped property. So that may be a workable compromise. We're not quite sure. But it appears that, again, this is a demolition by neglect, a building that was left to stand on its own for too long without anybody doing anything about it. And because it's structurally unsound, there may be no alternative but to take it down.
Based on what we know from that particular example with the Forward School and some of the other recent preservation efforts, what do we know about what it takes to make a preservation effort work, to have a successful preservation effort?
Well, there are several different avenues that you can take here. On a small scale, the individual property, the old home, if you've got a dedicated buyer who really loves working with old homes and putting heart and soul and a lot of sweat equity into it, you can do it. The Darley House in Claymont, Ray Hester bought that in the 90s, turned it into a bed and breakfast after some restoration work, and now it's a community landmark. The Friends of the Old Stone School, a community group organized when the stone school was damaged in an ice storm and was almost beyond repair, they rallied the community together and they got, you know, their own contributions, state grants, foundation money, and they were able to raise enough funds to restore the school, and now it's again a centerpiece in the community. Tweed's Tavern in Hokesson, another good example of the Hokesson Historical Society working with the state, notably the Department of Transportation, to have that building moved not once but twice to get it into a better position and to restore it. And in fact, just this week they broke ground for a new exhibit center that's going to stand adjacent to the tavern, where they're going to be able to display some of the artifacts that archaeologists recovered when they were trying to determine the status of the tavern some 20 years ago.
But even if you have that kind of community support, there are obstacles to preserving any building. And I guess the one we've heard you mention a couple of times is this idea of demolition by neglect. It seems like that is the biggest problem. If something's too far gone, it's too far gone.
Oh yes, that's certainly the case. As I said, the Cux Aldrich House, the Murphy House, the tennis barn at Bellevue State Park, which is right there in the heart of a state park, and now the Forwood School. Essentially, yeah, the owner does nothing for years. The structure deteriorates to the point where the repairs would cost more than anyone's willing to pay, and so then it's torn down. Now, of course, redevelopment is also an issue. Owners come in, look at a property and say, hey, there's a better way of using this. And again, if the community doesn't rally behind the need to save or desire to save a particular structure, redevelopment can be the cause of losing a piece of our history. And the preservation laws in the state, some say, are just really not strong enough. I mean, there aren't any laws on the books in the state that prevent demolition by neglect. And the laws that we do have, there are some that provide for things like resident curatorships, where you can move into a state-owned or a county-owned property if you agree to restore it and keep it up and so on. Often these arrangements are rent-free, but there are so many restrictions and requirements to do it that in many cases, you often have to have enough money that you'd be able to buy a $400,000 or $500,000 house on your own. And if you can, you're able to do that, you know, why do you want to go into a 200-year-old fixer-upper and spend the next 5 years, you know, trying to get it back into shape? So it is really a challenge in that respect.